You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate. A note to our listeners. A section of this audio recording will sound unusual. This is the result of an attempt at reducing noise that would have made listening to this recording unpleasant. Thank you very much.
Good morning. As we do every Sunday before we start our service, we humbly acknowledge that we are in the territory of the Mississaugas of the Nunukret First Nations, whose lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. So thank you for coming out this morning. It's a little bit of a blustery day. We'll talk about that in a minute. If you're here for the first time, we have pamphlets at the back that will tell you a little bit more about West Hill, and I would invite you to join us for coffee and good conversation after the service. Whenever I have the pleasure of being able to welcome you to a service, I always try and find a kind of a West Hill moment, a connection to what West Hill is all about. And I was reading the newspaper yesterday. Part of my daily routine is to pick up the newspaper and read, and one of the things I check is the obituaries to make sure that my name isn't there. However, I came down and I found something in the obituaries that just grabbed me. And I was going down and I'm reading and it's going Greenham, Grinke, Grolier, Hale, and Hardy. Like, R. Hale and R. Hardy, right behind one another in the newspaper, kind of passed away. So the demise of Hale and Hardy. And I was trying really hard since yesterday morning to think of how do I connect that back to West Hill. And I was struggling with that. The best I could come up with was that I kind of see West Hill as a spiritual gymnasium. Yeah, I know that sounds really weird, doesn't it? A spiritual gymnasium where we try and strengthen ourselves and develop a sense of vim and vigor and you know what, and vinegar, and Hale and Hardy. But unfortunately, Hale and Hardy aren't there anymore. So we'll just have to settle into being a place where we come and challenge ourselves like we might in a gym. Challenge ourselves to be stronger, be more compassionate, be more loving.
Grounded, Guided, Growing, A Time for Centering, from Scott Kearns.
Watching the movie yesterday in the theater in the morning, which was different and less expensive, found out, I was watching the issue of the accident that put the fellow in the wheelchair, and I was reminded of the concept or the idea of theodicy, T-H-E-O-D-I-C-Y, theodicy, which is thousands of years of trying to figure out the evil in the world, the suffering in the world, if there is a goodness in the world or a God in the world, and that whole struggle, if God is love, how do these things happen? If a person is good, why do the good things happen to a bad person? This has been around from the beginning of time. And at West Hill, when we sat down to write our vision works, we didn't solve it. Which wasn't surprising. But the very fact that we couldn't solve it led us to go in a different direction and to say that, well, we will ground ourselves with what we can know, which is that this life is interconnected, which means that bad things happen, which means that things happen which are bad for some people. The tornado doesn't know it's a bad thing, and I'm saying that quite honestly. It's happening on the planet, but bad things happen from it. So it was so liberating for me to sit there during the movie and not have to explain why, in any higher existential spiritual plane, on any plane, but just say, this happened, how are these characters going to respond to this? So the same in our lives, this happens. Beautiful things happen. How do we respond to that? So that idea of interconnection that we ground ourselves in was so, so solid as I was sitting there on these plush recliner seats. You always want to say excuse me every time you pass one person, because it's like you're in their living room and you're going in front of them, in front of the screen on these lounges. But so then we choose how, and then we choose to do it together. So
we have two readings this morning. The first one is from Moses Maimonides. He's a 12th century rabbi. He was one of the most influential scholars of the Jewish Torah, as well as being a preeminent astronomer and physician. And he wrote prolifically on Jewish law and ethics, and well respected in his world and the world beyond Jewish law. And here's what he had to say. There are things of which the mind understands one part, but remains ignorant of the other. And when a man is able to comprehend certain things, it does not follow that he must be able to comprehend everything. So teach your tongue to say, I do not know. Our second reading comes from George Eliot. Her real name was Mary Ann Evans. She was a 19th century novelist, poet, translator, journalist. She was raised in a strict evangelical Protestant environment, and she came to renounce organized religion, but she always had a strong sense of justice and compassion for others. She used a male pen name, George, to preserve her privacy and ensure her words would be taken seriously in the largely male literary world. But here's an excerpt from her book called Middlemarch. You are discontented with the world because you can't just get the small things that suit your pleasure. Not because it's a world where myriads of men and women are ground by wrong and misery and tainted with pollution. And she also wrote, the most solid comfort one can fall back on is the thought that the business of one's life is to help in some small way to reduce the sum of ignorance, degradation, and misery on the face of this beautiful earth. Blessed is the influence of one true, loving human soul on another, offered as wisdom for the journey.
Focused Moments from Greta Bosper.
Greta asked me, would you like to go see a movie with French subtitles or bring the message up front? So we went and saw this incredible movie, which has had bad reviews and good reviews. I read both, and I could see what they were saying in both. But I loved it. I liked it. It was good. And what I wanted to bring to it, having drawn what I could from it, is the subject of why my father bought and installed in his car a mirror this wide with different angles on it, only one that I ever saw, and it was to compensate for the very physical fact of blind spots. So a blind spot is your punctum caecum in your eye. Medical literature calls it that. And it responds to the lack of photoreceptor cells on a part of your eye where the world is coming in. Now, my first slide there, you've seen those tests, the tests for your blind spot. And what you do is you close one eye and you look at one side of that and you move back and forth from the picture. I don't know if it'll happen on the telephone or not. It might. You're a little too far away. But if you saw that in a piece of paper, you would move away. And I did it last night over and over, because as soon as you move in a certain place and the other side disappears completely, you do not see it. You think someone moved it, but there's no one else in the room. So you back up a little bit more, and there it is again. You do it over and over. I did it over and over. Just see it come and come and stop, stop, stop like that. Then you do the other eye, and the same thing happens on the other eye. We have a spot in our eye called the blind spot. It's the optic nerve head where there's this hole. So I want you to look around and find your blind spot. Let's just look around. Where is your blind spot? You can't, it's very small, but you can't see it because you are blind to it. So you can't find it. I looked all around the room, actually got up and walked, no, I didn't. The interesting thing was, the next slide shows actually go to the next slide for a second, Matthew. This fellow is the fellow that discovered this. Because it looked like, from the angle, that ought to be our best spot to see it from. But it's empty. They thought it would be our most accurate vision at that point, and that point shows a hole. So, they studied this carefully, and they found that all animals have this blind spot, except for the one that will show on the screen now. Are you seeing an octopus? Yes, the cephalopod has no blind spot, which is very lucky for them. Their eye, now the cephalopod is a mollusk, right? You know that, like a seashell is a mollusk. It's the shell that disappeared over evolutionary time. Another one that's frightened me, when I the next picture is another cephalopod. When I brought that squid to the screen, it was like this big. It was quite frightening because it's the eye of a squid. He has no blind spot either. And the next picture shows why. Technically, you probably figured this out already. You can see from this medical diagram that the human is on the left and the cephalopod is on the right, and they just don't have that blind spot. So the other guy, can you back up to that other screen that you had there before? If you look at the dot in this picture long enough, and I don't know what will happen on the PowerPoint, but it does at home. You look at it long enough, the blue circle disappears completely and is filled in with the white. You do not see it at all. The same peripheral part of that. So you didn't see the hole. When I asked you to look for your blind spot, you didn't see the hole. Because you don't see the hole because you have filled it in. Your eye has filled it in with something, but not what was actually there. I don't know if there's a goal to that. You have filled it in with something from the surroundings, but it's not exactly what was there. So the idea of compensating for what we didn't know we didn't see with something else that's not there is the theme I'm working on for this movie. So, the idea of a blind spot, we want to talk about what we don't see well, what we don't even know we don't see well, because that's really the problem, is we don't know that we don't see it. When I asked you to look for your blind spot, you couldn't find it, and you still won't find it. You'll see it filled in, and you won't know you filled in because you think that's what you saw. And I'm repeating that just for that idea of the not knowing. The next slide, I think, I believe, is Ben. If you go to, yes. Ben Franklin, there are three things extremely hard: steal a diamond, and to know oneself. That's hard. So the next slide is a sort of an image of a blind spot. I like to picture this. I don't think it's a picture, but I just found this picture and I like it. With reality coming, trying to come at you there, it's trying to come around the edges to show you there's something behind there that you're not seeing. So I'm just going to ask you to leave that slide on. So we're watching the film. And how many have seen the film? I just want to know if you've seen the film. Upside. Upside. How many have seen the remake, the older version of the movie, which was the, okay. I would like to show the trailer now because I remember that sort of thing where Greta doesn't. Yes, okay. Yes, trailer.
Don't your arms work?
They don't.
You can move your mouth.
As can you.
You need to prove you're looking for work.
I've been looking, trust me.
Three signatures by tomorrow, or you can tell it to the judge. Tell me about a time when you worked hard to solve a problem.
This morning, getting up.
We're going to find you someone you like.
Let me be your arms and your legs.
I love that. All right.
Okay, now.
You need to wait your turn.
Relax. It's not a holdup. Just sign this one, please.
How would I sign it?
I don't know. Slowly? Well, don't your arms work?
They don't.
You can move your mouth.
As can you. I need assistance.
How much does it pay?
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah. My bad, man.
You are not qualified for this position.
Stop.
Have you ever changed a catheter?
No.
Pinch the head, insert.
I can't feel it. Oh, well, I can't. You want to feed your soul? You listen to it, cool.
Think about what you're trying to do to me.
It's amazing, isn't it? Sounds just like it.
Yeah, it's uncanny. You
He was rich as JB?
No, rich.
Which car are yours?
All of these to the right.
Oh, my God.
They're not practical.
Exactly. You can have any girl you want, but like Lady Gaga's bow ties. I'll be close to each other. You can't move your body. She can't move her face.
I specifically said nothing for my birthday.
I'm sorry you gotta have a surprise party in your huge mansion. Someone's got real problems. I'm fighting this to my son.
And whose fault is it? Is it yours or is the world out to get you?
Are you mad? You wanna break this big ass bottle of wine?
Yeah.
What else you wanna do, the bull?
Tell me it, miss.
In preparing that, I wanted to say, particularly to Roger, so that's no, this movie doesn't wrap it all together. This movie puts issues out, and some of the reviews saying you still coded it, you still glossed it, you still there's always that. There isn't any one worldview that does it all. But I want to talk about some of the blind spots that this movie raised. But first, take it to yourself. The spots in your life when something's in the rear view mirror that doesn't show you, how often have you felt, I didn't see that coming in my life. I didn't see that happening to me. I didn't know that bad news was going to come over the phone. I didn't know that bad news wasn't going to come from the doctor as I sit there in the office. And I'm going to just take us empathically through that idea. I didn't see that coming. It wasn't on my register. I didn't know that I was going to get that diagnosis. I didn't know after a while that was the prognosis. I didn't see that coming for my life. That has changed everything. I didn't understand what pain felt like till this. I didn't know what loss felt like. And it's happening in my body. I didn't see that before, that my body could feel this way. I didn't know that if I felt this way, it wasn't going to get any better. Seriously, we met these. I didn't see that coming. I didn't see that I was heading towards a surgery that was iffy. I didn't know that the surgery wasn't going to fix it completely. I didn't know that the recovery time would take so long. I didn't know that there was no recovery from that. All these possibilities. I didn't know what it felt like to put that medication in my body. I don't feel like myself anymore. I didn't see that coming. I didn't know what it would feel like to even get the side effects of the medication and be told that it was worth it because of the positive effects. I didn't know what that was going to do. I didn't know that the medication would wear off after a while, and if I wanted it too bad after the pain came back, I was going to be in for another load of troubles, which would be addiction to the medication. I didn't see that coming. I didn't see the reduction in my abilities because of this. I didn't see the reduction in my options. I didn't know you had to live with shrunken options in life. I was in my blind spot. My life was headed in a good trajectory. I didn't see that coming. And I didn't see that changes weren't just temporary, because nobody was coming to fix it. So this was now forever for me. My life changed to a forever. And I wasn't prepared for the emotional reaction to that. I didn't know what fear felt like that was that big. I didn't know what grief felt like that big, or anger, or despair, or resentment. I didn't know what that felt like about these children. And the sadness and the depression, I didn't know what it felt like to withdraw. I thought someone had to choose that, and here I am withdrawing, and I don't know how to get back. Now that's a heavy load. And some of those came out in that movie, the change in a man's life from one accident. He didn't see that coming. That was in his blind spot. But it came, and it had an enormous amount of effect in his life. So I'll switch it to say, what do we miss? What is our blind spot about someone else going through that? About someone else, that whole list, I just actually cut and paste my whole list down and put it down the next section, to say my blind spot about someone else who's just got a diagnosis from the doctor. I hear about it. That's very too bad. I'm sad about that. I hang up and go on with my own life. And their issue is now a blind spot. I don't see them. Not that I necessarily should, but I don't see what they're going through when they get a diagnosis. I don't fully see what they feel like when the prognosis is given to them 2 weeks after that. I don't feel their loss. I don't know their pain. I don't know it. I've heard about it. But as we watched the movie was trying to give us the inside experience of a man who'd lost the use of arms and legs. And we were watching it, and a movie like that is trying to get us to empathize, to see what we would not have even seen before, to see what medication did when he talked about the medication working for a while, but not enough. Now, doesn't that sound demanding? Except for me, if it was me and the medication wore off, it would be a very different thing. So how to see past the blind spot about someone else's experience, particularly if we haven't had that experience. That's where the empathy becomes such a really difficult thing is, because one of the results of a blind spot is to say, well, I know they're going through a tough time, but really they should be able to, they shouldn't take it there. And we have a whole reaction because that makes our reality better, and then the blind spot disappears and we're just fine again. To actually enter someone else's life. Now, another aspect of how far back can I suck? Because I feel, can you hear me if I'm this far away? If I up the volume, my own volume a little bit? Yes, okay. So the idea of the disease and the surgery and the medications, that's one thing. The other thing this movie really, really emphasizes, all of a sudden, this very independent, very intelligent, very athletic man needed help for everything, for most of it. He needed help. So in my life, what I didn't see coming that accident I was in meant that I need someone else to come into my life and do the things for me that I was doing yesterday by myself. That's all. Well, I didn't see that coming. I knew I had an accident, but I didn't see the change it would make in my life that I cannot do these things anymore. So in the movie, very clearly, it showed a man who was active and who was a, what do you call that? Parachute. He wasn't parachute. What was he doing? Parasailing. It was a parasailing accident. which is a fairly well-off person's kind of an accident to have, which is mentioned in the movie a couple of times. The idea of going from that independence to dependence, and I don't know if you've caught it, if you haven't seen the movie, but even when the new caregiver who had no experience at all enters this man's private, embarrassed, and humiliating life and sits him in a chair, finally turns away, and because he hasn't strapped him, the man starts to fall over to the side. Didn't see that coming. Didn't even think that this man couldn't sit out straight on his own. And the man himself would not have even been able to picture that a day before that accident. I will not be able to sit by myself. Someone will have to help me move into a straight position. The idea of the catheter, just thinking about a catheter, of course, if you ever had a catheter, you're hoping you were out when they put it in and out, and that usually happens. But this was so many layers of difficulty. This young man had never said the word penis out loud, and here he is putting a catheter in a man he doesn't know, and didn't want to say it. You can imagine from both perspectives. There was no experience beforehand to prepare them for this. This was new. They all of a sudden were seeing something they had not seen before. They had not said before, and they entered that scare. So the idea of dependence, the movie so stressed to let another human being in to your most private self. You know, where I work in long-term care, one of the difficulties they're having right now is when they keep calling it a home. It's your home now. This is your home. You've got a capital H on it, because that's what it is. But it's not, it's the expectations for that. I thought that I would just be getting more care. I didn't realize it was a different caregiver every week, and I was showing my body to different strangers all the time. I didn't know it was a different stranger every single hour. Of course it isn't, but I can't remember you, so it is a stranger every hour that's changing my catheter or washing or bathing me. And the fact is, there's no locked doors in that home. Some people never saw that coming. When he said, this is a home, he says, you're home, you have your own private room. You're paying for a private room. Would you consider your home private if you couldn't lock a door? Actually, you can't even shut it more than that in your bathroom. So I didn't see that coming when I got that diagnosis, when I got that prognosis. So let another human being into the private self of yours. And I'm not even talking about your headspace. I'm talking about just your body. This movie really, really showed that. The catheter idea, what they say in long-term care very much so is there's a lot of indignities, but somehow or other for us, when it comes to the bathroom, everything to do with the bathroom, that's the last thing we want to let go of about Christ. We want to take care of that on our own. And when we can't, that's a whole other vision of life that we weren't prepared for. We didn't see that coming. And the movie also says, what kind of a person do you want to let into your life there? What kind of a person would you want walking in and caring for you? They interviewed many, many people to see who would be the suitable one. The person doing the interview thought that several of them would be very good. Turned around to the actual patient. Nope, not that one, not that one. What if they couldn't say no? What if it was your colleague that was picking for you? Oh, this would be a good caregiver for you to take all your clothes off and bathe you. He got to say no. Who he said yes to was the most unlikely character that you could possibly imagine. And I think at times the character thought he was the most unlikely as well when he was asked to do things he never wanted to do. So there was just so many blind spot issues in the movie. One of the most pathos-filled one was a trusted colleague who knows you have insisted on a DNR, do not resuscitate, sends you to the hospital anyway, and you come out of it a quadruple. Let that one sink in. It went by very quickly in the movie, but it was very powerful. She loved him. He cared for her. There was a trust between them. But and I don't know if you picked up in the movie, he says, I said it carefully many times. No resuscitation. And she moved him towards that. So now his life is this. She should have seen it. One of the definitions of a blind spot in the Collins Dictionary is something that's in front of us that we should be able to see and we don't. Something we should be able to see, yet we don't. Now, when you heard the movie, when you heard him say, I told you many times, she should have been able to see that. And she didn't. And they forgave each other in that one. That was a tough one. That's lifelong consequences for not doing what he wanted. And again, it's a movie, and it could have gone very other ways with that. It could have been much bigger issues. Another one. The caregiver fella, assuming his son would be glad to see him because he showed up one day and brought a present, which he had stolen, although his son didn't know that at the time. He didn't see that his years of neglect would be affecting this son's reaction. Didn't see it at all. Walked in, I'm here, you should be happy, I showed up. Huge blind spot, son saw it. He didn't see it, and he marches in. It's brought to his attention by Philip, the person he's caring for. But it still seemed to go right past him. Now I'm doing this, so it should be okay now. So the blind spot to the past. So from the eyes of Dell, the black ex-con, Philip, the cultured tycoon, Yvonne, the faithful, dutiful assistant, Dell's wife and son who have given up on him forever pulling through in their life, Philip's one date that thought she could handle this, but turned out it was in a blind spot and chose not to, which is fine. So when I was watching the movies, what do the characters see that's there? What do they not see? And what do they fill in that blind spot? Incorrectly. But they can't see it. Because it doesn't look like a hole. It looks like a complete dish. Because they filled in. We do that. And then what do we see? What do I see? What do I see and not see when I'm looking at? And I've put together some thoughts. I just want to take you like in a panorama of these thoughts. And I'm saying, what do I see? But you can think about what you see or not see, or what you see. When we see, in this movie, but any time, a man with a criminal record, what do we see? What do we not see? But we don't know that we don't see it, so we fill it in with our own assumption, our own presumption, and now we've got a picture we think is the picture, but part of it was of our own making. What about a man with a person of any... in a wheelchair. What do we think when we see that? What do we see? And what do we not see? But we don't know we don't see it, so we've filled it in. And we don't realize that the picture is not exactly accurate. What do we think when we see a person with food on their shirt as they're eating? What do we see? The woman that was looking at him, that was experimenting with a date, the movie fastened on that piece of food, and that changed her. She knew in that moment she could not do this. It wasn't the food particularly, but that's what it was. What do we see when we see someone not able to do something? What do we see when we get in the movie or any time, a person lives in the penthouse in Manhattan? What are we seeing when we hear that? And what are we not seeing? And what have we filled in? And we think that's the picture. What about a person that lives in a dingy, unsafe apartment like his wife was? What do we see? Or what do we not see? What about a person who is a paraplegic from an exotic parasailing accident, which is different than a person who's a paraplegic from reckless driving? Very different reaction on our part, but there's things we do not see. And this movie tried to fill you in on a larger picture of Philip the tycoon and Dell the struggler so that we reduced some of the blind spots and saw more, but we were also seeing them struggle with their own blind spots. And if you've ever watched a movie, you want to stop and you need to look at this because we can see that, or the movie's trying to show us that, but the characters aren't seeing it. Our son Isaac came over. He was learning to drive, so I was sitting in the passenger seat, and he was sitting beside me, and Greta was sitting in the back, and he was driving very well. And I don't know how the subject came up, but I said something about, I get
carsick more in the passenger seat than I do driving. So I prefer to drive than to sit there being moved, you know, in the car. And he said, he stopped. He says, I thought you always thought the man should drive and not the woman. I said, no, Greta's actually a better driver than I am. She really is. As she just took very humbly in the back seat there. But he thought, he had filled it in. He saw me drive all the time. He had filled it in with his own story. And if we hadn't had that little talk, and it's not a big deal, but it was sort of for me in a moment there to say, no, anyone is, I prefer to drive with seven men in the car. It doesn't matter to me. I want to move me instead of being moved, right? That sounds funny. But so those little moments of, if we hadn't had that particular, that blind spot would have continued. Movie. What do you see when you think of a rich man with big ideas for what he wants to do with his life? What do you think when you see a poor fella who can't hold a job with big ideas for his life? Different perspective, different thing we're not seeing with that. It is often easier to become outraged by injustice half a world away than by oppression and discrimination half a block from home. And I would even reduce that to right in front of our eyes. So one of the things that was very powerful for me was the music. And they didn't do it in a stereotypical way, which I was very appreciative of. They didn't do it that the rich man loved opera and the poor man loved rock or soul, R&B really. And if you remember the Titanic, I was mad at that movie because what they did with that is the rich people were up there listening to classical music on the very fancy deck, and then they went downstairs to the folk music dancing jig of the real people, which were not. So it was like if you're rich, you have to like that, and if you're poor, you can't. And I thought that was too much of a binary dichotomy there. This movie blended it, which I thought was really good because there wasn't they removed a blind spot to that. That the music was, what do you assume? What do you see if someone likes opera? What are the standards there? Oh, he must be a snob. He must be a snob if you like opera. Or what do you, if someone only likes popular music, well, they must not be. We have all these blind spots to that. And, I'm sorry? I don't recall one time when Greta has been giving a message. Did I intervene? In a deprecating way, as she has just done. But yes, and I was about to say, I have two friends sitting over here that look like very nice people, but you can never tell, that have taught me that my facial expression on the topic of some music, and I've shared this with you before, there's music that grinds me. I hate, I just cannot stand the sound of that type of music. And what I've been taught is my blind spot was when I say that, it very well might be you understand me saying, you must be an idiot to like it. You must be uneducated to like it because I know that it's not good. So that was a blind, that's always helped me. And on other topics, I give an opinion, I'm talking about a subject. I know I'm completely blind to where it falls on you about what you assume I'm saying about you. Now, if I am, I'm culpable, and that's wrong. But if I'm not, if I'm being careless because I'm zooming past my blind spot, and I don't think, what could this do? Now, the other thing is I would never have known it if I didn't have some friends that come and confront me and tell me that. And that's so important, so important. I don't want hundreds of blind spots in my life. I don't want them. So the end, in the end of the movie, and I'm asking Peter to play this after the service, is after they put, there was an Oscar, I can't remember the year, an Oscar program where Pavarotti was to sing, and he became ill and could not sing from Turandot, which is absolutely amazingly stirring. And Aretha Franklin was backstage, and she said, let me listen to it. She listened to it. And she came to the stage and she sang that song. Now, she did not sing it like Pavarotti. She was Aretha Franklin singing this song. But Puccini didn't write it for Pavarotti. He just wrote it. And the two of them sung it their way. And the beauty of that for me was, It wasn't one of these things is good and one of these things isn't. They joined together and saying it was absolutely, totally moving. So what should I be seeing that I'm not seeing? What do you know about me that I'm not seeing that I should be seeing? Where are you in my blind spot that I've not seen, but I've filled it in with something that made sense to me, of course. Maybe not you, but if you ever did look at my vision, if you could look over, okay, this is how I see Sheila Fairburn. Okay, there you are, Sheila. So, but I didn't know something about Sheila, and I filled it in with my interpretation. And Sheila looks at it, that wasn't right, that's not me. But if I don't know that, I go on with my Sheila Fairburn picture. It's a very nice picture, by the way. But, I mean, it might not be, right, if I filled it in incorrectly. So I go back to the movie Avatar. The most beautiful, beautiful moment in that movie was when you found out how they greet each other. How they greet each other. They greet each other by looking at each other and saying, I see you. I see you. That's much more powerful than hello. I see you. But I'd like to put the two movies together and say, I see you. I don't know your name. What's your name? Eric. I don't know Eric. So this is new for me. So I see you, but I'm aware that I have a blind spot. And if it's a new person, I probably have a rather large blind spot. I've already filled it in. I already know about Eric, right? I know about Eric. I don't. But if we don't walk around knowing that we can say, I see you, but know that I have a blind spot. Really important. Because who should be filling in the blind spot? Who should be filling in my blind spot about Eric would be very nice if it was Eric. Now, we don't have to do that. Let's do that after the show. Okay. But the idea is I would like to walk around with an accurate view, as accurate as possible, of Eric. Now, others of you, I've known you very, very well. So I don't have a blind spot about you, right? Wrong. The blind spot's always there. I know some of you so privileged. Greta and I had a conversation the other night, and we know each other really well, and we love each other extremely dearly. We hold each other with such respect and care. We had a conversation about one of our dynamics together. It didn't get too loud. It was interesting, but both times in the conversation, we both stopped and said, I didn't know that. I didn't know that about how you were taking that. I had filled that blind spot that I didn't know I had with something else, with my interpretation, and that's my view of it till then. And then, okay, if I go into the conversation saying, okay, I have blind spots. Well, not that one. No, I'm right about that. No. Let's have the conversation. And Greta, same thing. I didn't see it that way. I didn't see that before. If we'd gone on without that one, still love each other, still care, but that dynamic wouldn't have had the wholeness in it of clear vision on both sides. And I've had that with my daughter, Becky. We had a very open relationship all our years of talking, but one thing she had not told me. And until she told me that, some things were filled in an incorrect way. As soon as it was, oh, okay. Now, the love filled it in quickly, but we didn't know that. So I want to see better. I want to see more. I want to see more clearly. I want to look at you and say, I see you, but I don't fully see you. And the more you share with me, the more you choose to share with me. Now, I probably will never have to insert a catheter in any of you. I don't want to ever do that with anybody. I work in long-term care. I see things every day that are difficult and challenging. But that movie really helped me see, again, from the perspective, is that it's a gift I give you by saying I have blind spots about issues, about stuff that's important to you, about whatever, about you. And I don't want to act on what I have filled in there. I want Dorothy to fill in my own blind spot about Dorothy or about something I'm commenting on blithely and irresponsibly. And Dorothy's saying, well, I'm not going to talk to him about that because he already thinks it's... No, I don't want that. I want it clear and clear and clear. I want the gift that we give each other to be the admission, the acknowledgement of blind spots. and the responsibility to say, I'm open to you filling in, so I'm not filling it in with something from me. I'll take it. So the last thing I want to say, so you fill it. So I have a blind spot, and I say, can you fill it in? And you fill it in. I say, oh, I didn't like that. I don't want that to be true. No, it's to accept what that person has told you as part of the reality. So, as Maimonides said, and John said, there are things of which the mind understands one part, but remains ignorant of the other. He said this at about the year 1200. So we really should be catching on to this idea. And when people are able to comprehend certain things, it does not follow that they are able to comprehend everything. Teach your tongue to say, I do not know. And George Eliot, the most solid comfort one can fall back upon is the thought that the business of one's life is to help in some small way to reduce the sum of ignorance, degradation, and misery on the face of this beautiful earth. Blessed is the influence of one true, loving human soul on another. And may I say, offered as wisdom for the journey, may we walk in its light. During the reflection time, I have a highway sign for you to watch while you're reflecting.
Go out into a world that is separated into so many different groups. We can separate by age, we can separate by race, we can separate by wealth, we can separate by abilities, we can separate by mental health or physical challenges. It's broken into so many different little groups that it becomes evident to us that it's all whole. Because no one thing can possibly take priority over all others. And though we also live in a world where those priorities are shifted, seeming to privilege some and not the others, we can add our voice to that mix. We can add our truth, we can add our story. And we can find ways to see beyond the barriers to our own vision. So go from this place to that world and open your eyes to every different way that you might be making a mistake and find what truth lies behind it. Go in peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.